Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
Verse 4, John tells us concerning Christ that in him was life. You see, life, this thing that we experience, it's not simply created by him. It proceeds from him. In him was life. You see, every living thing owes its life to him.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his study in the Gospel of John. Join us as Pastor Brian resumes his teaching on John chapter 1, verses 3 through 5, in a message titled, Jesus and Creation. Now here's Pastor Brian.
I subscribe to this magazine called Natural History. And I don't know why I do that. It's kind of torturous to read through it. But a few issues back, the entire issue was edited by Richard Dawkins. The entire issue was dedicated to proving that evolution is a fact, not a theory, and doing everything possible to try to discredit creationism or to try to discredit the intelligent design movement. And as you read through the various articles, basically you find just a regurgitation of the same things they've been saying over and over and over again with absolutely no evidence to support it. And then in regard to the creationist especially, but also the intelligent design people, there's just a bunch of slander and a bunch of name calling. Because there's nothing else they can really do. So that is the reality. Observation and the fossil record support the biblical account of reproduction after Cain. Another area where we see the crisis in the evolutionary world is in regard to the ape men. Now, we've all probably heard of or remember hearing about, maybe when we were in school or some of you are in school now and perhaps you've seen the charts or heard all about the various different ape men, hominids, the Nebraska man or the Java man or the Peking man or the Piltdown man or all of the different names that they give to these supposed creatures that were evolving from lower life forms, from apes into men. Did you know that in the scientific community, there is so much confusion and conflict and argumentation among them? Did you know that there are some scientists who actually believe that apes evolve from humans rather than humans evolving from apes? That's how disoriented they are in their perspective. You see, this isn't a unified school of thought. There's so much division within it. But they do unify over one thing. They are all adamantly against the biblical account of creation. And so that's where they find unity with one another. But when you look at these ape men, did you know that every one of them have been proven either to have been a hoax intentionally perpetrated upon people, as was Nebraska Man and Piltdown Man, both intentionally fraudulent, and the rest of them have been proven to be nothing more than either human skeletal parts or ape skeletal parts. And generally, it's apes. The only ones probably being Neanderthal man. They've come to the conclusion that Neanderthal man was actually really man with probably a severe case of arthritis. But, you know, this stuff is taught still today. It's been totally discredited. But it doesn't stop our public school systems from still teaching it. It is astounding. There's another thing that's come a little more recently that radically contradicts the theory. And that is the idea of irreducible complexity within the cells. Now, there are two movements that are opposing evolutionary theory. There's the creationist movement, and then there's what's called the intelligent design movement. Now, the intelligent design people generally want to disassociate themselves to some degree away from the creationist because creationism has that stigma of believing in a young earth, thousands of years rather than millions of years, and a literal six-day creation as is recorded in Genesis. And as we've already seen, the U.S. Supreme Court has come out and stated that it's unconstitutional to teach that in the classroom. So the intelligent design people are seeking to sort of disassociate themselves from the creationist simply because they realize we're not going to get anywhere if we're being identified with that. So they have taken a bit of a different approach, and they've sought to show that there is too great a complexity within nature for it to have occurred accidentally, which is, of course, what Darwinism teaches, that it all happened randomly. Now, within the intelligent design movement, one of the arguments that they've put forth is this irreducible complexity of the cell. Now, if you read, like I read about five different articles today, if you read articles reporting the different battles that are going on in places over this particular topic, they will generally refer to the intelligent design people as putting forth an argument that says, you know, things are too intricately designed to have evolved, therefore there must be a designer. That's only part of the argument. And there's a lot to that part of it, but there's another part to it that makes it really, I think, irrefutable. And it's the irreducible complexity of the cell. You see, it's not only that a cell is so complex that it must have been designed, but the cell is irreducibly complex, meaning that if you took any part of the cell away, the cell itself could not exist. Now, you see, the whole idea behind evolution is that things develop over a long period of time. It's called gradualism. And gradually things came together. But irreducible complexity shows that you cannot have the gradual development of a cell. It has to come together in its entirety, or it can't exist at all. And Michael Behe, in his book Darwin's Black Box, he entitled the book Darwin's Black Box to point out that back in Darwin's day, he did not know about the complexity of the cell. He thought the cell was rather simple. And thinking the cell was rather simple, he thought it probably wasn't all that big of a deal for the evolutionary process to take place. But what biochemists have come to understand is that the complexity is, it's just unimaginable. And so because of the irreducible complexity, evolution is not a possibility. Mathematically speaking, evolution is an impossibility, mathematically. I heard somebody give an example the other day that I thought was quite astounding. And this was the example. The probability that evolution could have occurred randomly, or life could have spontaneously generated from nothing, is the same as if you could take the entire universe, not just our galaxy, not just all of the planets, you know, not just our solar system, not just the stars, not just our galaxy, but if you could take the entire universe, all of the many galaxies, if you could take it all and reduce it down to its molecular base, in other words, if you could reduce it all to atoms, you'd have quite a few atoms, to say the least. Now, let's say that you could somehow mark one of those atoms. Or in this case, you'd have to mark several, but we'll do it one at a time. If you could mark one, then blindfold yourself. And then on your first attempt, reach out into the universe reduced to atoms and find the one marked one. If you could do that 1,300 consecutive times, then evolution might have been able to occur. Now, needless to say, this is a mathematical impossibility. Somebody said if you won the lottery two or three times in a row, they'd shut the thing down. Because it can't, you know, in a random situation, it just cannot occur. But this is mathematics. Now, the irony is that those who are still holding fast to evolutionary theory, they will refer to people who are in the intelligent design movement as mindless, numbskulls, uneducated. Their scientific degrees are invalidated, they say. Richard Dawkins refers to them as pseudoscientists because no true scientist, he said, would believe anything but evolution. But you see, when you look at the lack of support in the fossil record, when you look at the ape man hoax, when you look at the irreducible complexity of the cell, and all of these things, they're all basically telling us the same thing. Evolution did not occur, could not have occurred. Let me quote to you from a few well-known scientists who are not by any stretch believers. These are men who are very well known in the scientific community, and most of them probably still holding on to evolutionary ideas in one way or another, amazingly. But let me quote to you from these guys. I just want to give you a real clear picture of what those in the scientific community who are being honest are thinking and feeling. NASA astronomer Robert Jastrow, he said, "I'm fascinated by some strange developments going on in astronomy, partly because of their religious implications and partly because of the peculiar reaction of my colleagues. The essence of the strange developments is that the universe had, in some sense, a beginning, and that it began at a certain moment in time. Most remarkable of all, astronomers have found proof that the universe sprang into existence abruptly in a sudden moment of creation, as the Bible said it did. Theologians generally are delighted with the proof that the universe had a beginning, but astronomers are curiously upset. It turns out that the scientist behaves the way the rest of us do when our beliefs are in conflict with the evidence. For the scientist who has lived by his faith in the power of reason, the story ends like a bad dream. He has scaled the mountains of ignorance. He is about to conquer the highest peak. As he pulls himself over the final rock, he is greeted by a band of theologians who have been sitting there for centuries." Now that's Robert Jastrow, NASA astronomer. Listen to physicist Sir James Jeans. "Nature seems very conversant with the rules of pure mathematics. In the same way, a scientific study of the action of the universe has suggested a conclusion which may be summed up in the statement that the universe appears to have been designed by a pure mathematician. The universe can be best pictured, although still very imperfectly and inadequately, as consisting of pure thought. If the universe is a universe of thought, then its creation must have been the act of the thought, or an act of thought. Indeed, the finiteness of time and space almost compels us of ourselves to picture the creation as an act of thought. Modern scientific theory compels us to think of the creator as working outside time and space, which are part of his creation, just as the artist is outside of his canvas." Now, this man is not a creationist by any stretch, but he's just looking at the reality. The universe is designed. And he says it seems inescapable that there would be a designer. Nobel Prize winning biologist Francis Crick. He was involved in the process of discovering DNA. He said, "An honest man armed with all the knowledge available to us now could only state that in some sense the origin of life appears at the moment to be almost a miracle. So many are the conditions which would have had to have been satisfied to get it going." This is the same man who said that it is impossible. It is an impossibility that evolution could have occurred on this planet. So you know what he concluded? He concluded that it occurred on another planet and space people brought it here to Earth. Now, if that's not science, I don't know what is. Here's the final one. And this one to me, this one says it all. Harvard University biochemist George Wald. Listen to what he said. "One has only to contemplate the magnitude of this task to concede that the spontaneous generation of a living organism is impossible. Yet, we are here as a result, I believe, of spontaneous generation." Listen, when it comes to the origin of life, now this guy is being dead honest. Listen to what he says. "When it comes to the origin of life, there are only two possibilities, creation or spontaneous generation. There is no third way." Now listen, spontaneous generation was disproved 100 years ago, but that leads us to only one other conclusion, that of supernatural creation. We cannot accept that on philosophical grounds. Therefore, we choose to believe the impossible, that life arose spontaneously by chance. Now, there is an honest man right there. He's an honest man. He's telling the truth. Spontaneous generation is impossible. Disproved. There's no way it happened. But the alternative is God, and we cannot live with that as an alternative. So again, what does it show us? It shows us that what's going on is not a battle over science and superstition. And that's constantly how it's being represented in the media, isn't it? All these medieval-minded Christians trying to take us back to the Dark Ages. They're coming in and they want to teach our children that there's a creator. And they're attacking science, they say. No, the superstition is evolutionary theory. And, you know, if you listen to a debate between an evolutionist and a creationist or intelligent design scientist, you find that they have no evidence to marshal to their cause, so they are forced then to just revert to a name-calling kind of a situation. That's the only defense they have. Now, going back to our text, as we have diverted a bit, notice it says all things were made through him. And without him, not one thing was made that was made. That's literally what it says. Not one thing. Now, moving away from the evolutionary issues for a moment, you know, there are those who would tell us that Jesus Christ is a created being himself. They would say that he's a creature rather than the creator. And they would say that he was the first of the created order, and then the rest of creation happened through him. But they definitely assert that he is a created being. He is a creature. But notice, without him, there was not one thing made that was made. See, John couldn't have said that if that had been the case, because there would have been one thing that was made without him, and that would have been he himself. But John says, no, there's not one thing. And of course, as we've seen, the Lord Jesus Christ shares in the eternal nature along with God the Father and the Holy Spirit. But verse 4, John tells us concerning Christ that in him was life. You see, life, this thing that we experience, it's not simply created by him. It proceeds from him. In him was life. You see, every living thing owes its life to him. That's why Paul would say in Colossians, we read the passage there about him having created everything. But then Paul goes on to say that by him all things consist. And what he means by that is that everything that is presently being held together by him. See, you see, it's not that Jesus created everything and then stepped back from it. He created everything and he's still intimately involved in it. He's enabling it to go on. Because life itself is vitally and essentially connected to him. And apart from him, you can't have life. There is no such thing as life apart from him. Peter refers to him as the author of life. He is the author of life. Life is because of Jesus Christ. In him was life. Isn't it interesting when you think about that? You know, we really have no power over life, do we? Which one of you in this room, or maybe somebody listening over there, which one of you are responsible for your own existence? We had nothing to do with it. We had no say-so in the matter, did we? He's the one who has given us life. And isn't it a strange thing, but a sad reality that as much as we would want to hold on to life, we can't even do that. We can't even do it. Oh, how many people have come to that point where life is expiring. And with everything in them, if they could, they would pay anything. They might even have all of the money imaginable. But they can't buy life. They might have all the power, but they don't have power over that one thing. Think of all the people that have lived and died, all the people that have exerted power, all the people that have ruled throughout human history, all the great rulers and kings and even dictators and all of the power that they possessed. But when it came to this one issue, they had no power whatsoever. You see, it just shows us clearly that life is, it's outside of our grasp. It's outside of our power. It's outside of our control. It doesn't have anything to do with us. In him is life. He's the author of life. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The life of God that he has imparted to us has also included in it light.
For the month of June, Back to Basics Radio is offering a book titled A Story of Grace by Phil Metzger. The book follows the work of God's grace across Eastern Europe, from the fall of communism to the present day. After nearly half a century of Soviet tyranny, the Iron Curtain fell apart. Communism had failed, and the people betrayed by it struggled to find some truth to hold on to. Into this era of uncertainty, God sent some unlikely missionaries. Carrying guitars and Bibles, they told the people of a God who loved them and longed for a relationship with them. As a result, an incredible story began to unfold. It's the story of hope in the midst of hardship, a story of mercy in the darkest hour, but most of all, it's a story of God's amazing grace. We encourage you to call us right now at 1-800-733-6443. Or visit us online at backtobasicsradio.com to order this book titled A Story of Grace by Phil Metzger. And when you give a gift to Back to Basics, we'll send you the book titled A Story of Grace by Phil Metzger as our way to say thank you. We really do appreciate your generous support of this ministry. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue next time with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the Gospel of John. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.